south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, how about this? Dear Johnny, on the last show, you were talking about being stuck for a couple hours in an airport or in an airplane seat, sitting next to some disgusting or stinky person. I think, Johnny, that happens everywhere, even standing in customer service lines at Sears. And if you're like me, and I'm a detailed-oriented person, which sort of makes me even more anal about that kind of stuff, when I'm standing next to a person who's got a mole on his face with a big hair growing out of it, that just totally distracts me. And it always seems to be senior citizen men and women. I just sometimes feel like yanking that hair right out. And I'm thinking, what other gross eruptions might be lurking? I really don't want to know. But you can't help speculating. At least I can't. What about their cooking techniques and general hygiene? I think a long, hairy facial mole is a pretty good indicator. I mean, to see that thing, or maybe they choose not to see that thing, looking back at them in the mirror every morning. Worse yet, sometimes you're sitting next to or standing in line with someone who has one of those bulbous skin tags or polyps growing out of their neck or face. What's up with that? And I'm thinking, man, you got enough money to take an air flight, but you haven't got $100 or whatever it takes to have that damn thing removed. Oh, and by the way, Johnny, I just looked it up on YouTube. There are 100 do-it-yourself ways to eliminate those skin tags. Gratis. So there's just no excuse. Now, don't get me wrong, Johnny. I'm not particularly picking on Latin Americans or Latin American airports. But really, I'd have to say Greeks, Turks, and Eastern Europeans take the cake and win the lottery on that one. Anyway, Johnny, just saying that kind of stuff drives me over the edge, too. And again, you rarely see that with people under 50 years old. It's almost always in the senior crowd. It's like as some people get older, they just don't give a rip anymore. And don't get me started on ear and nose hair. That drives me nuts, too. Which is why, to me anyway, it's so cool to see an older person, really well-dressed, polished, and groomed, like Thurston Howell III and his wife, Lovey, walking around at airports. But, unfortunately, that's more and more becoming a rarity. You know, Johnny, every time I take a flight, I think, whatever happened to the proper lady and gentleman types? Because, you know, 35 years ago, when I first started flying, people dressed up to go to the airport. They looked good when they were going on a flight. It seems as if as airport food gets crappier and crappier and customer service and the way TSA treats us less and less humane, we too have lowered our bar, our personal standards, and our dress codes. I'll tell you, Johnny, for most people that flew a lot pre-9/11, going to an airport was a pretty cool experience. Now it's nothing but low-level stress punctuated by periods of panic. And talk about a cultural gap between the way people fly today and old-school flyers, and modern manners and etiquette versus old-school manners and etiquette. I get a jolt of what it used to be like every time I visit my aunt in her extended care facility in Arizona. Admittedly, she's with a higher class of people. She pays around $90,000 a year to stay there. And maybe because of that, the seniors there are a cut above casual. They even have formal Saturday dress-up events. It's like walking into an old Cary Grant movie. I've never seen so many sport coats and tuxes. Even the ladies and gents who are wheelchair-bound are dressed to the nines. But even when it's not a formal party night, those old guys and gals really take care of themselves. They look sharp. But sadly, in a few years, they'll all be gone too, and all we'll really have left of that era will be those old Fred Astaire and Cary Grant movies. Though, Johnny, when I finally move down to Central America, I certainly won't be hauling down a sport coat and tux. The thing is, I've said to myself over and over again, when I retire, 7 years from now, I'm giving all my ties, sport coats, and spiffy shoes to Goodwill. Because, you see, Johnny, I've had the kind of job for years now where I had to wear a suit and tie every single day. Women will tell you high heels are torture. I say, try wearing a tie 40 hours a week for 30 years. So much for my 2 cents, Johnny. I'll be coming to your next seminar. Shorts, tennis shoes, and polo shirt, signed Rolf, not Ralph, R-O-L-F. Okay, Ralph, I've got two extended comments. Number one, it's not a good idea to ditch all your dress-up stuff when you come down to live here in Latin America. I did that myself when I first came down. That was my mindset. I was a sport coat and tie guy up in the States, too. In fact, I must have had 100 freaking ties and just a closet full of suits, even one or two tuxes that I'd bought because, hell, I was just tired of renting them all the time. I did find out in a hurry after I started getting invited to parties, quinceaños, Christmas anniversary parties, weddings. Hell, you'll find out when you're down here, you get invited to parties all the time. And you'll also notice right away, Latinos and Latinas really like to dress up for those things. They love putting on the dog. Even your cleaning lady and maintenance guy living in a tin shack, they'll have a set of dress-up clothes and they'll look really sharp when they get invited to parties. And you know, I travel a lot and I found out a long time ago it's a good idea to pack a nice set of shoes and a dark kind of neutral go-with-everything sport coat and a nice shirt and a tie to go with it because you never know what kind of event you're going to be invited to. Now, the thing is, many shirt and tie gringos who retire to Latin America and decide to ditch all that and go casual the rest of their life, they've kind of made a vow to themselves. It's not that you can't show up to a wedding or an upscale gig here in Latin America totally casualed out. Gringos do it all the time, and Latinos and Latinas cut us a lot of slack. It's that gringo advantage thing. So we can be severely underdressed and won't take any flack for it, but boy, if a Latino shows up that way, whoa. In fact, to them, there's a lot of things they just don't get about us and they're confused by. One example is that smart, astute gringos don't wear bling. And if we have a high-end cell phone, it's well hidden. Of course, the reason why is then we're not a target for people who'd like to snatch that kind of stuff. Whereas for the average Latino or Latina, their high-end smartphone is often the most valuable thing they own, and they'll take the risk. It's a fact that the vast majority of Latinos with very high-end smartphones don't even have hot water or a clothes dryer in the house. It's all about the show. Priorities, priorities. Oh, and if you're down here long enough and you have a cheapo cell phone, like I do, you're bound to hear the comment, especially from the Latinas, "You're a gringo. Why don't you have a better phone?" It's the stereotype that gringos have money and can afford everything. So why in the hell wouldn't we have an iPhone 626? Or have necklaces and rings of real gold bling? Bottom line, we're gringos and they'll cut us slack on almost everything. The gringo advantage rides again. Oh, and just a little advice for you casual, under-the-radar gringo gals and guys who are in the dating and mating game. If you're going out with a Latino or Latina, don't ever expect to change or modify their desire for bling and dressing to the nines. Oh, they have tons of bling, all right, but at least it's not gold because they can't afford it. But if they did have the dough, look out. Meaning, don't ever think you're going to get them to dress down and look like the tree hugger that you are. Even if you're into the overpriced L.L. Bean, Timber Ridge, and Banana Republic tree-hugging duds. Fact is, trying to get your Latino or Latina better half to fit into that mold, man, it ain't going to happen. And though he or she will certainly want to dress and class you up a bit, it's futile to try to get them to dress down like a casual traveling gringo. All right, now for my second comment on Ralph's email. He mentioned senior citizen gringos. Isn't it funny, as people get older, they're trying to look younger, dyeing their hair, getting that Botox? Health club, vitamins, supplements, articles and blogs about staying young or getting younger. Tons of dough spent on anti-aging pills and creams. Meanwhile, as soon as a surgically enhanced, liposucked, collagen-injected, over-60 type bounds into a building, and he or she spots a sign saying there's a 10% senior discount, somehow, instantly, that person kicks into old age mode. He slows down, stoops a bit, voice changes, and suddenly, he's a geezer. Man, what we won't do to get 20 cents off on a $2 subway ticket. All right, switching gears, but not all that much. How about this email that just came in from Mr. D, talking about healthcare up in the States versus down here in Latin America. He says, "Johnny, I just got your healthcare report and read it in one sitting. Very, very interesting and well worth it. However, I'd like to mention something a lot of people don't know. And another reason to look for healthcare somewhere else than up in the first world. Did you know that in the United States, a large portion of a hospital's Medicaid and Medicare reimbursements are tied to the patient's satisfaction?" Then he gave me a link to this article that's entitled, "How Does Patient Satisfaction Impact Medical Reimbursements?" Bottom line, the article points out, Medicare reimbursements are tied in part to patient satisfaction portions of one or more surveys they fill out. Two of the main ones have the titles Hospital Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers Survey and a Hospital System Survey known as HCAPS. Then the article says, poor evaluation survey results will forfeit some of the reimbursements for hospitals. The Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services currently withhold a percentage of Medicare payments, 30% of which are tied to those survey scores, according to the American Medical Association Journal of Ethics. Ethics in medicine? What a concept, huh? Must be something new. Anyway, Mr. D continues with this example. He says, Johnny, let's say a drug-seeking patient comes to your local emergency room seeking pain or anxiety relief, but he just really wants drugs. If the hopefully highly diligent medical staff does not do what the patient demands in the moment, then the patient will likely give a bad or low rating to the hospital and the staff. Then he says, I know this, Johnny, because one of my best friends is an emergency room doc. He told me he was forced out of a hospital because he didn't want to enable a particularly vocal patient who wanted to receive opioids. He said the patient complained to the administration and my friend took the fall. Now imagine most doctors with a couple of $100,000 in student loan debt and now they're out of medical school and are contract employees of a hospital. Are they really going to be independent, innovative, and personalizing individual care? I don't think so. How can they be? They'll be more worried about a government-mandated patient satisfaction score or just getting sued. So, Johnny, that's yet another reason to vote with your feet and your dollars. All right, Mr. D. Didn't know that. How about you listeners out there? Now, as mentioned, I get a lot of emails about medical tourism. And you know, I hate the fact that tourism and medicine have been combined into a phrase like that. It kind of takes the legitimacy out of the medical part, you know? It's like, hey, let's go on vacation. Let's take a tour, a medical tour. Oh, I can't wait to get my gallbladder out so I can convalesce by the pool sucking down Mai Tais. Anyway, medical tourism has been kind of a buzzword up in the States for last maybe 5 or 10 years now. In fact, I get emails from and run into people all the time who pop back and forth to Mexico to get dental work done or boob jobs, stem cell treatments, which they call células madres here, means mother cells, and, well, just a whole boatload of elective medical procedures. And, you know, if you go on the internet, you're going to find all kinds of medical tourism websites. They're all in English, of course. And you think they exist, they're there, because they're trying to help you find a good, cheap alternative to having something done up in the States that'll cost 4 or 5 times as much. But the truth is, and I've done a lot of research on this, those medical tourism outfits are only in it for the money. They're 100% in it for the money. They don't want to help you. They want to hook you up with someone or something, a doctor, hospital, clinic, that they made some deals with well ahead of time. What they do is they sign contracts with doctors, hospitals, and clinics and beat them down on the price, promising lots of volume, lots of gringo volume, a steady flow of patients coming from up north who have the cash money for elective procedures. In other words, for the doctors, there's no monthly payment plans. They get paid up front from the medical tourism outfit. So there are a few things to keep in mind when you go on that medical tourism website, that'll be in English, looking to have your hernia repaired in Guadalajara. Of course, medical tourism's all about pre-planned surgeries. It never was about emergency surgery. And yes, it's true, you can get all kinds of alternative medical treatments here in Latin America, and most of it's completely legal, which is why it's also buyer beware, and you have to do some research yourself. However, those medical tourism companies are mostly geared towards people who are going to have traditional type surgeries. They rarely get involved with alternative medicine stuff. So anyway, there are 3 reasons why a guy from Cleveland might go to a medical tourism website and check out gastric bypass surgery and how long he'll have to convalesce in that Latin country before he can go home again. 1, it's obviously about the money. 2, medical tourism outfits speak English. You're thinking, man, what a relief, ain't that great? But that's where they get you. 3, those medical tourism sites claim they've vetted out the doctors, physicians, hospitals, clinics, etc., So you don't have to wonder about the credentials, the professionalism, and the history of the docs and the staff you'll be dealing with. Number four, the medical tourism sites will hook you up with the flights, the hospitals, the convalescing time and sequence, and itinerary for whatever you're getting done. And man, doesn't that sound good? They do everything for you. It's a turnkey operation, start to finish. But here's what you didn't know. Whatever they quote you as the cost for the treatment itself, it's going to be about 100% more expensive. That's 2 times more expensive than if you walked into that very same doctor's office yourself and scheduled the surgery with him. So what I'm saying is you could save half again off the price of the treatment if you did a little bit of the legwork yourself and skipped the English-speaking medical tourism site. And since most first-world gringos don't speak Spanish, coming down to Latin America and finding your own doctor all by yourself is a scary thought. But what people don't realize is most all doctors in Latin America today speak English. In fact, most Latin American medical schools require that you speak English to even get accepted as a student. But let's get back to that price issue. First question that always comes up is, hey, Johnny, how much is LASIK surgery for my eyes going to cost if I have it done in Latin America? Up here in the States, it's $6,000. Well, let's dissect that a little bit. You just heard it said that whatever you're getting quoted for the actual medical procedure from start to finish, including the recuperation time and all that, will be about twice as much as you would pay if you came down and walked into a doctor's office on your own and had him schedule your treatment, etc. That said, let me offer a little proof. Exhibit A. I have in front of me right now, in English, a pretty complete price listing of what one of these medical tourism companies that you can find on the net charges for quite a number of procedures. In this case, it's a medical tourism outfit that'll ship you down to Guatemala and ship you back to Cleveland. Now, the prices quoted here are just for the medical procedures, including the medicine, the hospital, doctors, auxiliaries, and all that, not the flight or whatever hotel, Airbnb, or flea bag, backpacker, hostel you choose to convalesce in whilst waiting for follow-up appointments after your surgery. Of course, I don't recommend flea bag hotels for $10 or $15 a night, though the whole point of coming down is to save a ton of money, right? But some gringos just don't listen. All right, let's talk about some direct medical procedure price comparisons right off a medical tourism website that'll ship you down from Cleveland, Milwaukee, Seattle, or wherever to have that elective procedure done, in this case, in a first world hospital or clinic in Guatemala City. All right, let's first talk about dentistry. It says in the USA, the average porcelain crown is $1,300. If you use their service and have it done in Guatemala, it'll be $412. Dental implants, it says the average price in the States, $3,950 a piece. In Guatemala, $1,750. Uncomplicated wisdom tooth extraction, $375 in the States, $135 using their service and having it done in Guatemala. Single root canal, that'd be a front tooth, $540 in the States. In Guatemala, $150. Upper denture, God, wouldn't that be miserable? $2,500 in the States, $540 if you use their services and have it done in Guatemala. Uncomplicated white filling in a tooth, $300 in the States, $70 if you use their services in Guatemala. All right, let's stop and analyze those numbers for a second. If you do the math, you'll see that all of the prices quoted in Guatemala are a half to a third of what you'd pay for the same thing up in the States. Sounds like a great deal, doesn't it? And that's in fact why these medical tourism sites can claim, and it's true, that for the price of having the work done up in the States, you can generally get the entire trip, flight, hotels, and everything paid for. Basically, you get a free Latin American vacation out of it. Good example, talk about the dental implant. $3,950 in the States, $1,750 in Guatemala using their service. You're saving slightly over $2,000. Man, that'll buy your flight and hotel for 2 weeks for sure. But the dirty little secret is those medical tourism companies are charging at least 100% more than the local folks or you yourself would pay if you walked into the doctor's office and scheduled it yourself. In fact, as a lot of you listeners know, if you send me an email, sometimes I'm personally able to hook you up with the specialist that you'll need for whatever treatment you want to have done. In fact, it just so happens that at every single one of my expat insider seminars, and I've been doing them for 8 years now, Attendees have sent me emails in advance saying, Johnny, can you hook me up with a dentist or with a GP or a dermatologist or plastic surgeon? Yep, that happens all the time and we're usually able to do it. And of course, we make the arrangements for you because we, or I should say mostly I, have vetted out first world hospitals, clinics, doctors, specialists, dentists. And we, or I should say I, have a very good handle on Latin American insurance plans. So if you come down, especially to the Guatemala area, I have a very excellent list of specialists I could hook you up with. All right, let's take, for example, a porcelain crown for a tooth, estimated cost $1,300 in the States, $412 if you use this medical tourism company. But if you come down by yourself, do a little legwork, or send me an email and you're in the area, I'll send you to a top-notch dentist who got a specialty degree up in the States, and he'll charge you $200 for a crown. That's less than half of what the medical tourism outfits will quote you. All right, let's look at some other procedures. How about liposuction? Stateside average cost, $19,750 in Guatemala with this medical tourism group, $5,400. The real cost, however, if you're a local, walking into a highly qualified, first world trained cosmetic surgeon's office is $2,000. Again, just about half of what a medical tourism outfit will quote you. By the way, are you sad? Do you frown a lot? All right, how about a facelift? It says in the States, $15,000 to $21,000. In Guatemala, using the medical tourism outfit, $5,500. The real cost, if you were to walk into the very same doctor's office, $2,500. Less than half of what the medical tourism guys will quote you. All right, how about more serious stuff, like a heart valve replacement? Average cost in the States, $170,000. Quoted cost with the medical tourism outfit, $24,000. The real cost, if you were to walk into that very same doctor's office and get that procedure set up, $11,000. Again, less than half. Oh, and how about this? An MRI full body scan in the States, $3,800. If you go through the medical tourism outfit and have it done in Guatemala at a first world hospital with a first world trained doctor, $750. The real cost, $300. In fact, not so long ago, one of my Expat Insider seminar attendees asked me, Johnny, can I get a full scan MRI? Hope you can hook me up. It's a couple of grand in Washington, D.C., where I live. And we did just that, hooked him up with the doctors at the very same hospital we take our seminar group through. His cost, $300. Again, less than half of what the medical tourism outfit quotes for the same procedure. Now, I could go on and on, but I'd like to finish off by quoting a series of stem cell treatments. In the States, it says around $50,000, but if you have it done through the medical tourism outfit, $8,600. Meanwhile, I have right in front of me a newspaper clipping out of a Guatemalan newspaper, in Spanish, of course, that quotes how much you'd pay for a series of stem cell treatments if you happen to walk into the clinic and hook up with one of their doctors. $4,000. Again, less than half of what the medical tourism outfits will quote you. So, for any of you listeners who are thinking of coming down to have some medical procedure done, shoot me an email and I'll send you a list with a breakdown of treatments and procedures, what they generally cost in the States, and what the medical tourism companies charge. And all you have to do to find out what the real cost of treatment is if you walked into that very same doctor's office on your own is to take that number and divide it in half. If you want the list I'm quoting from, just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Better yet, much better yet, is to go to theexpatfiles.com/healthcare to get my 100-page Latin American healthcare report, subtitled How to Get First World Healthcare at Third World Prices. All right, enough said about that. Now, for all you people out there who believe the BS that international living and these other retirement rags are saying about Medellin, Colombia, which seems to be the number one hotspot in South America now for gringos and expats, I know for a fact Europeans and gringos are pouring into Medellin, the wealthy Poblado region specifically, which has gringo English signs everywhere now, and therefore gringo expensive. Hey, it really is nice, clean, wonderful, in the Altiplano, and a really great place to live if you've got dough. And here they said Panama would be the new Costa Rica. Well, it kind of is. And now it's Medellin. Fact is, there are a lot of little Costa Ricas popping up. You got Cancun and all the little tourist towns in Mexico. And every port of call, the cruise ships stop. People ask, would I ever move to Medellin? Well, I don't like to be around gringos. Worse yet, you have to hear what this article has to say. It just came out this week. It's from a South American news source called ColombiaReports.com. Now, before I read this, I have to let you know that I was never big on traveling in Colombia. They have some really nice cities like Bogota and Cali, Medellin, and they really are pretty safe. But traveling from city to city is not very safe at all because they got the FARC and various narcos that control the traffic routes out in the boonies. You know, I just don't like the idea that you can't jump in your car and drive off aimlessly out into the countryside. You can't do that in Colombia or Mexico, by the way. Which is why, if you're considering Colombia, I want you to listen to this carefully. The title, Medellin's Fantasy Could Be Ending As Murder Rate and Unemployment Continue to Rise. It says, Medellin, Colombia, the city that once boasted a prime example of positive transformation, registered a huge increase in homicides for the third consecutive year. Mayor Federico Gutierrez appears to be losing control over the city's public administration with disastrous consequences for the municipal treasury, economic development, and public security, pointing out that homicides have increased by 27% since 2015, saying the increase in deadly violence is mainly due to a turf war between gangs loyal to the dissident paramilitary group, Catalanista, and the Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, along with an unnamed local crime syndicate. It says most homicides were registered in downtown Medellin, where 107 people were murdered in 2018. Then it says murders are increasing in other areas, such as gringoized El Poblado, an area once considered quite safe. Worse yet, it says unemployment in Medellin went up from 8.7% in 2015 to 10.8% in 2017. And listen to this carefully. It says, due to the fact the city's largest public hospital was forced to close its doors in December because of an ongoing national health care crisis. Not to mention, Mayor Gutierrez's right-hand man was recently sentenced to 3 years in prison. Well, that's par for the course. Not to mention, there's a huge financial crisis in the public utilities company, EPM, which is now being investigated for losing billions of dollars at the Hydro Tucanango Dam project. Meanwhile, total homicides in the city of Medellin for 2018 are at 627. All right, me, Johnny, here again. By the way, the other day I was talking to one of my buddies who's been living in Medellin for a couple of years. He told me at the end of our conversation, I hate to say this, the dollar is strong in Colombia, but it's killing off my paradise. You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!